Additional information. I want a wife. I belong to that classification of people known as wives. I am a wife, and, not altogether incidentally, I am a mother. Not too long ago, a male friend of mine appeared on the scene, fresh from a recent divorce. He had one child, who is, of course, with his ex-wife. He is obviously looking for another wife. As I thought about him while I was ironing one evening, it suddenly occurred to me that I, too, would like to have a wife. Why do I want a wife? I would like to go back to school so that I can become economically independent, support myself, and, if need be, support those dependent upon me. I want a wife who will work and send me to school. And while I am going to school, I want a wife to take care of my children. I want a wife to keep track of the children's doctor and dentist appointments, and to keep track of mine too. I want a wife to make sure my children eat properly and are kept clean. I want a wife who will wash the children's clothes and keep them mended. I want a wife who is a good nurturant attendant to my children, who arranges for their schooling, makes sure that they have an adequate social life with their peers, takes them to the park, the zoo, etc. I want a wife who takes care of the children when they are sick, a wife who arranges to be around when the children need special care, because, of course, I cannot miss classes at school. My wife must arrange to lose time at work and not lose the job. It may mean a small cut in my wife's income from time to time, but I guess I can tolerate that. Needless to say, my wife will arrange and pay for the care of the children while she is working. I want a wife who will take care of my physical needs. I want a wife who will keep my house clean, a wife who will pick up after me. I want a wife who will keep my clothes clean, ironed, mended, replaced when need be, and who will see to it that my personal things are kept in their proper place so that I can find what I need the minute I need it. I want a wife who cooks the meals, a wife who is a good cook. I want a wife who will plan the menus, do the necessary grocery shopping, prepare the meals, serve them pleasantly, and then do the cleaning up while I do my studying. I want a wife who will care for me when I'm sick and sympathize with my pain and loss of time from school. I want a wife to go along when our family takes a vacation so that someone can continue to care for me and my children when I need a rest and change of scene. I want a wife who will not bother me with rambling complaints about a wife's duties. But I want a wife who will listen to me when I feel the need to explain a rather difficult point I have come across in my course of studies. And I want a wife who will type my papers for me when I have written them. I want a wife who will take care of the details of my social life, when my wife and I are invited out by our friends. I want a wife who will take care of the babysitting arrangements. When I meet people at school that I like and want to entertain, I want a wife who will have the house clean, will prepare a special meal, serve it to me and my friends, and not interrupt when I talk about the things that interest me and my friends. I want a wife who will have arranged that the children are fed and ready for bed before my guests arrive, so that the children do not bother us. I want a wife who takes care of the needs of my guests so that they feel comfortable, who makes sure that they have an ashtray, that they are passed the hors d'oeuvres, that they are offered a second helping of the food, that their wine glasses are replenished when necessary, that their coffee is served to them as they like it. And I want a wife who knows that sometimes I need a night out by myself. I want a wife who assumes the complete responsibility for birth control, because I do not want more children. I want a wife who will remain sexually faithful to me, so that I do not have to clutter up my intellectual life with jealousies. And I want a wife who understands that my sexual needs may entail more than strict adherence to monogamy. I must, after all, be able to relate to people as fully as possible. If, by chance, I find another person more suitable as a wife than the wife I already have, I want the liberty to replace my present wife with another one. Naturally, I will expect a fresh, new life. My wife will take the children and be solely responsible for them so that I can be left free. When I am through with school and have a job, I want my wife to quit working and remain at home so that my wife can more fully and completely take care of a wife's duties. My God, who wouldn't want a wife? Lesson 10. How to describe yourself. Text A. All about me. I'm 12 years old. I'm large for my age and have big feet, which I'm self-conscious about. I look like both my mum and my dad, but in different ways. I have fair hair and blue eyes like my dad, and a mouth and expression like my mum. My nose is like my mother's, and definitely nothing like my father's. Thank goodness. I'm very like my mum in temperament, though I don't have her very hot temper. I'm rather a tomboy, but I'm not violent. I hate fighting and arguments. I hate being laughed at, and some teasing hurts me more than I show. I tend to sulk when I'm annoyed, and I tend to be a bit oversensitive. Friendship is important to me with people of all ages. My home is very important to me, and I would hate to be sent to a boarding school. On the whole, I'm a fairly tidy person. I'm quite creative with my hands. I like making models, pendants, and candles as well as other things. I like acting and music. I play the French horn and can play the trumpet. I'm not a very keen reader because I like to be outside most of the time. I ride my bike a lot and have been youth hosteling with it. My father lives abroad and I enjoy traveling to see him. I enjoy my food. Especially my French grandmother, as she is an excellent cook. And I have a sweet tooth, but I hate the dentist. I don't like my hair being brushed by someone else, and I hate it long. Finally, the one thing I really find boring is homework, as I would far rather be outside or make something. Text B. My thoughts. I sometimes wonder what my mind is like inside. Often I fancy that it is like this. I feel as if my mind goes round and round like the earth, and if my lessons make me think hard, it begins to spin. In my other class, it was getting all stodgy and still and lumpy and rusty. I feel as if there is a ball in my mind, and it is divided into pieces. Each piece stands for a different mood. The ball turns every now and then, and that's what makes me change moods. I have my learning mood, my good looks mood, my happy mood, my loose end mood, and my grumpy mood, my miserable mood, my thoughtful mood, and my planning mood. At the moment I am writing this, I am in my thoughtful mood. When I am in my thoughtful mood, I think out my maths and plan stories and poems. When my kitten is in her thoughtful mood, she thinks, shall I pounce or not, and shall I go to sleep or not? This sort of thing goes on in my own mind, too. It is very hard for me to put my thoughts into words. Additional information. 1. He's the sort of chap who loves to make entrances and exits. He'll arrive 10 minutes before everybody else, and he'll leave 10 minutes before everybody else. He'll come dashing in with a bunch of flowers, screaming hellos. He likes to be noticed. He loves telling jokes. He's a well-informed chap and keeps up to date with all the current affairs. He likes to talk and give his view on life. He's very successful. When he sets himself a goal, he works hard to attain that and to achieve it. He knows what he wants, and he'll set out to get it. As a result, he's successful. When you're talking to Roger, sometimes you're left way, way behind. His mind is whizzing over so fast that you're talking about something, and he's off at a tangent, talking about something completely different. He can't sit down. He can't relax. He's always jumping up and doing things, and finds it hard to concentrate at times. 2. She gazes at herself in wonder. Vanished are her healthy pink cheeks, her slightly red winter nose, her mole, her little freckles and blemishes. She is smooth. new maid. She dabs a little powder on top and stands back to admire the effect. It is pleasing, she decides. She wonders what it will look like by midnight. Will she be transformed into an uneven, red-faced, patchy, blotchy clown, an ugly sister? 3. When she was 23 years old, she met, at a Christmas party, a young man from the Erewash Valley. Morel was then 27 years old. He was well set up, erect, and very smart. He had wavy black hair that shone, and a vigorous black beard that had never been shaved. His cheeks were ruddy, and his red, moist mouth was noticeable because he laughed so often and so heartily. He had that rare thing, a rich, ringing laugh. Gertrude Coppard had watched him, fascinated. He was so full of colour and animation, his voice ran so easily into comic grotesque, he was so ready and so pleasant with everybody. Her own father had a rich fund of humour, but it was satiric. This man's was different, soft, non-intellectual, warm, a kind of gambling. She herself was opposite. She had a curious, receptive mind which found much pleasure and amusement in listening to other folk. She was clever in leading folk to talk. She loved ideas and was considered very intellectual. What she liked most of all was an argument on religion or philosophy or politics with some educated man. This she did not often enjoy, so she always had people tell her about themselves, finding her pleasure so. In her person she was rather small and delicate, with a large brow and drooping bunches of brown silk curls. Her blue eyes were very straight, honest, and searching. She had the beautiful hands of the Coparts. Her dress was always subdued. She wore dark blue silk, with a peculiar silver chain of silver scallops. This, and a heavy brooch of twisted gold, was her only ornament. She was still perfectly intact, deeply religious, and full of beautiful candor. Lesson 11. Is he a good neighbour? Text A. You and your family have been living in the same six-family apartment building for 8 years. The landlord's family also lives there, and, generally speaking, all the tenants get along fairly well with each other. Recently, however, there was a change in the apartment next to yours. A nice, quiet old couple used to live there. The old lady would sometimes bring over some cookies or small cakes she had made, and your mother, in return, would give them some food or help the old lady with her shopping. Unfortunately, the old lady died last month. Her husband couldn't live alone, so his grandson moved in with him. The grandson, who is about 20, has become a problem to your family. The walls of the building are thin, and he is noisy. You are used to peace and quiet, but the grandson likes to listen to his radio late at night. Sometimes friends of his visit, and they make a lot of noise. Everyone in your family is bothered by your new neighbour, and, as a result, is becoming more irritated. Your mother once politely asked the old man if he was able to sleep well at night, but apparently he didn't get the hint. If he did understand your mother's intention, and did speak to his grandson about it, the grandson apparently didn't listen, since things haven't changed any. Everyone in your family agrees that something has to be done, but no one wants to hurt the old man's feelings or cause him any problems. What do you think should be done?
Text B. Listen, the heating's broken in my room. When are you going to come and fix it?
I'm sorry to hear that, sir. I'll get someone right away.
You'd better. It's freezing up there, and my room's a disgrace. That maid's useless. I want her replaced.
Well, I'll speak to the housekeeper about it, sir.
But I'm sure... And that Hall Potter's another one. Cheeky devil. You should get rid of him, too. Doesn't know how to treat guests with respect. And look at the money I'm paying.
Well, I'm very sorry, sir, but George has been with us for 20 years, and we've never had any complaints about him until now.
And another thing! What are you going to do about those foreigners in number 27, carrying on all night in that funny language, shouting they were? It shouldn't be allowed.
If you like, sir, I'll have a word with them and ask them to be a little more considerate.
Yes, do that, will you? Then maybe I'll get some sleep.
I'm very sorry you've been disturbed, sir, but are you enjoying your stay apart from that?
Well, I don't think much of the restaurant. I can't get a decent plate of fish and chips. It's all salad and fancy stuff. And the service is terrible, too.
Well, sir, I'm sure the waiters try to be as helpful as they can, but they are very busy at dinner.
Well, you should get some more, shouldn't you? You should be able to afford it. You're charging enough this year, aren't you?
I'm very sorry you feel that way about it, sir. If there's anything else I can do to make your stay here more pleasant, please don't hesitate to ask me.
Don't worry, I'll tell you all right.
Additional information. The time of day is about 7:30 in the evening. You are on your way home and are presently on a subway train which is about full. At one of the stops, a young man in his early 20s gets on the train and sits down next to a middle-aged woman reading a book. The man looks like he might have been drinking a little. After a few minutes, he reaches into his pocket for a cigarette and lights up. There are signs on the subway which prohibit smoking. People usually obey the signs, since it is both dangerous and inconsiderate not to. The woman turns to the man and very politely says, "Excuse me, sir, but you aren't supposed to smoke on the subway." The man ignores her, so she once again says, "Excuse me, sir, but people don't usually smoke on the subway." The man looks at the woman and says, "Why don't you mind your own business, lady?" The woman closes her book, very calmly stands up, looks straight at the man, and says, "I think the safety of all the passengers is everyone's business, young man." She then turns to walk away, when suddenly the young man jumps up and grabs her by the arm and turns her round. The woman yells. Lesson 12. Seeing the World. Text A. If someone offered to pay all my expenses for a month's holiday anywhere in the world, I would feel very surprised and very excited. It would be difficult to decide where I wanted to go. Should I go to one place or to lots of different places? If I went to one country, I could see and understand a lot about it. If I went to lots of countries, my holiday would be more interesting and more exciting. I think I would decide to fly around the world and to visit 3 different countries. The countries I would visit would be Australia, the United States of America, and Kenya. If I went to Australia, I would stay there for about 2 weeks. I am sure it would be very interesting to visit a country which is so very different from my own. Before I went, I would write to one of my Australian friends. I would suggest that if it were possible, he should spend a week with me visiting Aboriginal tribes in the northern part of Australia. I would really like to find out how the Aboriginal people live in Australia today. My friend could explain what we saw, and he could translate what people said, because he majored in Aboriginal studies at Queensland University. While I was visiting Australia, I hope I could also see some of the large cities, such as Sydney and Melbourne. If I went to the United States, I would stay there about a week. I expect I would start by visiting New York. I have heard that New York is a very exciting city. I imagine that there are lots of tourist attractions, that the buildings are spectacular, and that the food is very varied. After I had stayed 2 or 3 days in New York, I would fly to San Francisco. I hope I could stay with my relations who live there, and I would visit the city and other parts of California. Finally, I would fly to Kenya, where I would stay for about a week. There are three things I would like to do in Kenya. First, I hope I could visit the coast, because I would like to see the old Arab cities and enjoy the beautiful beaches. Next, I would like to visit a game reserve. I imagine the wild animals of Africa, the lion, elephant, and hippopotamus, are very exciting and beautiful. Finally, I would like to visit the mountains of Kenya, where you can see snow on the equator. If someone offered me this money, I would be amazed. Unfortunately, I do not think this will ever happen, and I doubt if I shall ever visit these countries. Text B. Anne started work last summer, so she didn't have a holiday. She saved as much as she could, and in January she booked a package trip to Rosas, in Spain. She left London Airport early on the morning of the first Saturday in August. She was very excited, as this was her first trip abroad. During the flight they had a snack, and when they arrived at Barcelona Airport, a special bus was ready to take them to their hotel in Rosas. The weather was beautiful, and Anne enjoyed the bus trip. At the hotel, she checked in, and then went to her room to change before dinner. She was just ready to go downstairs when she found that her Spanish money wasn't in her handbag. She carefully looked in all her luggage, but she couldn't find it. All she had was a small purse with 10 English pound notes in it. Anne found a place to change her English money. She had very few pesetas, and she would be here for 2 weeks. On her way back to the hotel, Anne bought some cheese, some bread, and some oranges. When she got back, she told the manager that her doctor had told her not to eat Spanish food. She'd just have breakfast each day. This was all right, as she knew the price of hotels included breakfast. For the rest of her holiday, Anne swam in the hotel swimming pool, or lay on the beach and got a suntan. She also went for long walks with one of the other tourists, a Scottish girl called Jane. However, when the others went to interesting places, she always said she wasn't well. In fact, her holiday wasn't bad, except that she was always hungry. After all, a piece of fruit for lunch and bread and cheese for supper isn't very much, especially not for 2 weeks. Late in the afternoon of their last day, Anne and Jane were on the beach. Jane asked her why she never ate with them in the hotel restaurant. The food was excellent. Anne told her all about her money problems. Jane looked at her for a minute, and then said, "But didn't you know? The price of this holiday includes absolutely everything." Additional information. Travel books. There are several ways you can find out about the countries and places you wish to visit. You can talk to friends who have traveled to the places, or you can go and see a color film about them, or you can read travel books. It would seem that there are three kinds of travel books. The first are those that give a personal, subjective account of travels which the author has actually made himself. If they are informative and have a good index, then they can be useful to you when you are planning your travels. The second kind are those books whose purpose is to give a purely objective description of things to be done and seen. If a well-read, cultured person has written such a book, then it is even more useful. It can be classified as a selective guidebook. The third kind are those books which are called a guide to some place or other. If they are good, they will, in addition to their factual information, give an analysis or an interpretation. Like the first kind, they can be inspiring and entertaining, but their primary function is to assist the reader who wishes to plan in the most practical way. Whatever kind of travel book you choose, you must make sure that it does not describe everything as marvelous, fabulous, or magical. You must also note its date of publication, because travel is a very practical affair, and many things change quickly in the 20th century. Finally, you should make sure that the contents are well presented and easy to find. Lesson 13. What's wrong with them? Text A. I'm 40 and married with 2 children. My trouble is that I haven't got enough to do. The kids are at school all day and the house is empty, so I eat chocolates mostly. I've put on a lot of weight, but I can't give them up. I try as hard as I can, but I just can't stop eating. Dr. Bruce writes, I think Mrs. Allen would be happier if she found a job, or if she got out of the house more and made some interesting friends. If she did that, I think the weight problem would be solved. I'm 16. My trouble is my spotty skin. I've used all the creams on the market, but none of them do any good. And now I've met a marvelous girl, but I'm afraid to ask her to go out with me. Dr. Bruce writes, Most teenagers suffer from this, of course, at some time or other, and it makes them very shy and self-conscious. What will other people think of me if they see me like this, they wonder. And it's a pity, because if they didn't worry so much, the skin trouble would soon disappear. Tom should learn a relaxation technique, yoga for example. Then I think it'd solve the problem very quickly. My problem is time. I haven't enough of it. I sleep badly, and I wake up tired. I get indigestion every day, and now I'm beginning to get bad headaches and pains in my chest. And don't tell me to take a holiday, Doctor. I haven't got time. Dr. Bruce writes, If Mr. Taylor had more common sense, he'd find the time to have a holiday, or change his job. If he thought for a minute, he'd see that he can't go on like this. He should rest more. Then he'd work better. But that's the silly thing about men like him. They only believe they're ill when they're almost dead.
听力课堂，欢迎你。
听力课堂，欢迎你。
听啊，讲啊。